So Golden Arrow Bus Service is announcing plans to increase fares in the coming months because of increased fuel prices. The petrol price went up at midnight last night along with diesel. And the way things are going at the moment, we're likely to get another hefty increase next month, which will take fuel closer to 17 rand a litre. And it's going to hit everybody and hit everybody hard. It's going to raise the cost of absolutely everything. The Cape Town Bus Company, so Golden Arrow is a Cape Town-based company. It says it is no longer able to carry the burden of rising fuel costs, and in line with conditions of its interim contract with the Western Cape Provincial Department of Transport, it is, as a last resort, increasing fares in coming months. So it looks like it'll do incremental increases, but by the time you blink and rub the sleep out of your eyes, your fares are going to be more expensive, and that's because of these rising petrol prices. And it's a tough time to be in the bus business. We spoke a couple of weeks ago to Tumisang Khabusele, who was really worried that his business wasn't going to make it through the bus strike, the long-distance bus strike. He operates coaches as part of Africa People Mover, and he's with us as our shapeshifter this evening. You had a proper job, and then you went into entrepreneurship, and you probably regret it every single day since then, or not?
Not quite. I enjoy what I'm doing, Bruce. My last proper job was in the railways buses with Prasa.
But you left there in about, what, 2010 or so?
No, I left in 2013.
Okay, 2013. What was the motivation to leave? Was it that Prasa was crashing and burning and you needed something else, or were you truly motivated to do your own thing?
Not quite. I mean, it was, in fact, a forced departure. I just signed my three-year extension. I was running the Autopex, the bus division of Prasa. So I had a bit of a difference of strategy with the board, where I felt that they were too interfering in the operational aspects of the business. And then I handed in my resignation and left. I mean, I was only, 3 months into the new contract.
And when you do something like that, I mean, you resign on a point of principle and you just go on that day. You're gone. There's no payout. There's no large capital injection. You cast yourself out into the wilderness. Or had you been preparing for Africa People Mover as you were leaving?
Fortunately, being a lawyer by training, I had an ironclad contract that I had entered into with Prasa. So I had an opportunity of walking away with about 3 years' worth of salary. And there was also an obligation on the part of the employer to pay for an executive education. And then I sat down with my boss at the time, and we agreed that I would walk away from the 3 years' worth of salary. Then they would pay for me to go and do an advanced management program at the Harvard Business School, which I did.
So Prasa then paid for you to go to Harvard Business School, which you then applied to run your own business. What was that experience like? Yeah. I mean, because you trained as a lawyer, so you're a qualified lawyer in South Africa. What was Harvard Business School like?
It was phenomenal. I mean, the program essentially caters for guys that are at the highest echelon in the company. So this will be CEOs, people on the verge of being CEOs, chairman of the board. The size of the program, 110 people. So you interact, you live, eat, do everything with about 110 CEOs from all around the world. So it's an eye-opening experience. It's, in fact, life-changing. And what the program did for me was to give me the motivation that the sky's the limit for me. Anything's possible.
Did you go off to Harvard anticipating you'd come back and start a coach business?
I did not. I mean, prior to that, I had spent a good 8 years of my life working for Prasa. So I'd gone through the ranks. I'd run the commuter rail. I'd run the long distance. I'd run the property division. I'd run the investment. So I'd been really around Prasa. And now, as in fact, it was a break that I needed, where with all the knowledge and skills that I had accumulated over the past 8 years that I had been at Prasa, that I needed sort of a light to do something different.
Prasa is a disaster zone. How do you feel about looking at the wreckage that's there right now?
It's really heartbreaking. I mean, a lot of work went into building Prasa. What people are not aware of is that Prasa officially came into being in April of 2009.
What was it before then? Was it still South African Railways?
It was South African Railway Commuter Corporation. Essentially, okay. You had a small company employing 200 people, which was responsible for managing the commuter subsidy. So they'll get subsidy from the DOT, then they will pay it over to, at the time, Transportnet to run Metrorail on their behalf. So back in 2005, December, Cabinet took a decision to have a focused passenger entity, where the assets, the passenger assets that were controlled by Transnet at the time, and also the properties, to be brought under one roof, which in fact that's the reason why I joined the organization in the first place. I was responsible for that leading that process. So they all came together nicely. Then on the 1st of April, 2009, we launched PRASA.
And the wheels have come off quite spectacularly. Would you care to venture some thoughts as to why it has been such a disaster?
It's a combination of too many things. I mean, before the interview started, I said one of the biggest problems facing South Africa in general is that we are conflicted. I'm not sure whether it's a South African phenomenon, but South African managers, in my view, tend to be the most conflicted, where people easily forget, you know, the servitude that you are in the public service to serve people. And one of really my motivation today is that when I got there on the 2nd of January, this was in 2007, I had an opportunity 3 months later, around just before the onset of winter, to go on a train ride with the then CEO, Lucky Montana. I mean, he was passionate about one thing, that you need to understand, you need to walk in the shoes of the people that you are saving. And what I saw on that line from Mabopane, north of Pretoria, to Pretoria, I mean, it was around 5 in the morning, winter, and everybody, you know, they saw this top management from Metrorail who were on the train with them, and were mobbed, and the people were complaining about the heaters not working, about the poor customer service. And I happened to be sitting to this old woman. I mean, she must have been in her late 50s, and she said to me, I mean, in Setswana, that, you know, my child, I'm so happy that you guys are on the train with us today. If this train arrive late at work because of the train, I'm going to get fired. So I got to appreciate for the first time that, you know, passenger rail, especially transport generally, especially one that caters for the poor, it's a difference between life and death. It's a difference between being employed and unemployed. And she said to me, even around just to Europe, that, you know, we are getting to a situation where people from Mawopa, Neharangu, or Winterfeld are not employable in Pretoria anymore because our trains are always late.
Yeah, and it's been illustrated recently with the complete breakdown of rail services in Cape Town, for example, and the flagrant public abuse that there has been at the hands of PRASA has been nothing short of disgraceful. In a moment, I want to talk about this journey, because we're talking about rail and buses. We're going to talk about your bus journey, because it's an important one, and you leave, you go to Harvard, you come back. I want to find out where you got the money. I want to find out where you got the inspiration. I want to find out how you're taking on the big guys in this long distance bus industry, because it's fiercely competitive. It's also very seasonal. You've got to be able to ride the ebbs and flows. More on that with tonight's shapeshifter, Tumisang Kgabosele, the chief executive at Africa People Mover, APM. So what was the light bulb moment for Africa People Mover? Were you at Harvard? Were you back from Harvard? Were you thinking, so what am I going to do with all this great newfound knowledge that I've got?
The light bulb was, in fact, it was also another chance encounter for me. I bought a flight to a conference in LA, so we got delayed in Dubai because of a massive sandstorm. As it so happened that in the same flight there was a gentleman, guy that I had known from the industry, Johan Ferreira. He's the owner of Intercape. And I mean, I had previous engagements with him at the time, Autopex 40% market share. Then we had Intercape, sizable one. Then we had Nico Boshoff of Unitrans, which is a Greyhound. And we'd meet, I mean, talk about industry-related issues. And when he heard that I was out of PRASA, looking for new opportunities, and he planted this thing, this idea that, you know, he's been looking into getting into a economy segment buses. You know, Intercape is a premium segment, and the dominant player that was always there was City to City, the company that I was running. So with all the
was City to City the sort of successor to Translux?
Yeah, it's a sister company to Translux. And he said that, you know, in instead of doing the a typical BEE transaction, what I'm willing to do is to give you a break. I mean, I'll give you access to my infrastructure. I'll give you insights. What the only thing that you needed to do was to go raise your own funding, go raise your own, go and apply for your own operating permits, and in exchange for me helping you, I'll take 49% stake in your business, and that's how APM. In fact, you won't believe this thing. This was done now. I bought a flight from Dubai to LA.
Yeah, but that's a wonderful. I mean, and again, it's about the contacts you have. It's about your reputation as you're working in an industry. Not everybody's just going to have the conversation at an airport and crack a deal. I mean, you did that based on history and reputation and the fact that you had a relationship.
No, exactly. As I said, Bruce, that, you know, the three biggest players, I mean, at the time we, I hope it was legal. We controlled about 90%.
I hope it was legal. Tell us what you did.
90% of the market share. Then there were issues of mutual interest between us, the three main operators. So we'll see. At the time, you remember there was this infamous company with yellow buses. So they kept crashing all the time.
Which one?
SA Road Link.
SA Road. Oh, forgotten about them. I don't know why they called them Road Link. They were very seldom on the road. Yeah.
So each time they would have a crash, then you'd have, I think at the time it was the current Minister of Police, who was the minister at the time. Then the authorities will come down hard on bus operations. So we'd have a whole lot of the buses now being taken off the
but
road.
But didn't they also set speed limits at 80 k's an hour or something, which meant it would take 2 weeks to get to Cape Town? I mean, there were rules around that.
No, they did at that time. I mean, it's a function. It's another example of how reactive the government can be. So our main engagement was about how do we salvage the reputation of the long-distance buses, which was not great at the time because of SA Road Link.
Now, so SA Road Link did you harm, but you get into bed then with existing operators and you start a brand new operation. How did you get the capital? Because capital is scarcer than hen's teeth anywhere in South Africa.
We struggled, and the most interesting thing was that, you know, we went on a roadshow. We met essentially all the banks, the local banks, with this great idea. Nice business plan. We are backed by Intercape. You have a partnership that can never be replicated. You've got a team that has run the largest bus company in South Africa, which is Autopex. Then you've got the oldest private bus operations in South Africa, the well-run, the gold standard of bus operations, Cape. As you know, it was a match made in heaven. Another time we thought that it was going to be a very simple thing for us to raise capital. I remember we had meant to start operations in December of 2014, having been working with Johan and his team since June when I came back from Harvard, you know, finalizing the business plan, applying for permits, et cetera, et cetera. So that had not happened. So literally a couple of days before we started, we already sold some tickets, and Johan decided to lease four old Intercape buses. So to APM, we quickly had to paint them red, put APM decal in them, and we started operating. I mean, at the time, at the staff complement of 14 people, that's how we got off the ground. The very first bank to come to the party, I mean, I know that it's going to be free marketing for them, was Standard Bank. I mean, we went to do a presentation, and in that meeting, there was this lady, Kathy Bell. She's the expert in terms of transportation. She's a walking encyclopedia, a huge resource at Standard Bank. Literally 5 minutes into the meeting, she said, she turned around to her colleagues and said, "When are you guys going to credit? They've got my support. I mean, I've been waiting for someone to come to us with this idea that the market is ripe for a new credible black player in the market." And my view was that the APM was going to succeed.
So, I mean, did Kathy Bell know you from your Parasa days?
No, she didn't. She didn't. I mean, she knew amazing. Of the industry. She knew all the companies. Obviously, she knew Yuan. And the complicating thing about it was that, you know, they made available a facility to fund six coaches. Obviously, with the proviso condition that you needed to put in, I think at the time, 20% of the deposit. So it's the money that we needed to raise. So we really struggled to come up with that 20%, where literally 30, I think about a month before that facility expired, We made a breakthrough with CIFA, Small Enterprise Funding Agency, where they agreed to give us, to loan us a 5-year term loan for us to access the Standard Bank facility. And in a very strange sort of circumstance, around the same time, we're talking to the NEF, and the NEF kept saying that we love the idea, but the issue is that you guys need to give us a proof of concept. We needed this thing to work. So NEF had committed a facility of about 14 coaches. And it was such a crazy thing that what started the funding was the commitment from Standard Bank. Then we got a funding from CIFA, which in turn enabled us to access the NEF funding. So that's how APM came.
But it's amazing how you have to make that first breakthrough first. And I mean, just the story you tell about this, Kathy Bell. And Kathy, if you're listening, well done. Good call. It reminds me so much of Chris van der Merwe's story with PSG when he went to go and see Yanni Mouton. And in the same sort of time frame, Yanni Mouton went, yeah, I like it. I'll put my money in. PSG, you guys must decide. I mean, it was a very similar, based on experience and instinct and seeing the opportunity for what it was.
Indeed, even to this day, I mean, 3 years later, each time she sees an APM bus on the road, she calls me, she still sends us picture. I mean, APM is Kathy Bell's baby.
No, but that's wonderful. I mean, it's really nice that that's the way it's worked out. You've come close to breakpoint, though, and in the last 6 months, you've been quite desperate.
We have been. I mean, what people don't understand, and especially organized labor, and people that, you know, when they drive around, they see there's a big, red, expensive bus, is that it's a very tough industry to be in.
What does a coach cost? I mean, I'm assuming they're in the region of 3 to 4 million rand. Am I roughly right?
It's about between 4.5 and 5.5 million now.
You did have that look saying you'd have no idea what you're talking about. No. Shut up. Yes, 4.5 to 5.5 million rand. That's expensive, yes? Yeah.
Sure. It's expensive. So out of the 12 months in the year, you're only profitable 3 months. So this will be around June, December and January. So that's the only time that where you get to make money. But that then gets complicated by the fact that there's under regulation, poor regulation, where in December, where the legitimate operators are supposed to recoup all the losses throughout the year. You've got a lot of illegal operators flooding the market with commuter buses. For the first time in my entire, experience that last year, December, you could get to Durban for about 180 bucks, which is an error. Previous years, during peak, you can't get to Durban for less than 350. So that's where the market has gone. And we're also complicated by the fact that, you know, we had that industrial action that went on for almost a month, the longest in the history. Yeah. So most operators are really struggling. I mean, what we are doing as APM to survive now, we have been in discussions with, and we are continuing to discuss with our funders. Unfortunately, I mean, most of the commercial banks and the NEFs of this world have agreed to work with us to trade out of this difficulty.
But it just extends the loan payment. It extends the amount of debt you've got. It extends the time before you are free to grow and run this business. It's frustrating, surely.
Extremely frustrating. And in fact, the only solution for this, and people might say that I'm advocating for oligopolies, the long distance market with the number of people is also a reflection of the economy. I mean, the economy is not growing. The figures that came through yesterday is that you are in a difficult economy. So unlike commuter, long distance travel is extremely discretionary. It's mainly for holidays. 50% of our travelers only travel with us once a year when they go home during holidays.
Yeah.
So people don't have to travel long distances if there's no need to. So the day our government starts appreciating the simple laws of demand and supply, that you just cannot keep on issuing too many operating licenses. The economy is growing. I mean, we are competing for the same pool of customers.
And then you've got a Mango and a Fly Safair that are doing it quicker than you and often sometimes even cheaper.
They are doing it, but it's a different industry. There's no competition.
Is it not competition?
No, they can't compete because, we take our customers and deliver our customers in the middle of a town.
True.
So imagine trying to get to ORT. From there, you go to King Shaka, which is in Watla Mesi. From there, trying to get back to Durban.
I see the competitive advantage there. I mean, are you going to trade yourself out? Are you confident that you've got the chaps to do it?
I'm extremely confident. My confidence is based on the what we've been able to build over the past couple of years, and the fact that we walked into the long distance with our eyes wide open. We understand what makes our business tick, what will collapse it. I think we are probably one of the leanest operators in the market. Our business is extremely agile. So that's what's helped us. I mean, unlike some of our competitors, our business is not built around the high peak demand. Our business is built around being able to be to achieve break even throughout the year.
How many coaches are you operating?
We are currently at around we were at 30. Then we had to write off one about a month ago. We lost it through fire. But in terms of our business plan, we are hoping to get to about 60 coaches by year 5. And in terms of market share, 20% plus. We are currently hovering at around 10%.
But that 10% has come quickly, hey?
They do, and they also disappear quickly.
Got to be competitive. And it's great. I mean, it's great for the industry. It's great for South African commuters. Fuel prices scaring the living daylights out of you, I'm sure.
They couldn't have come at a worse price for as a worse time for us. As I said to you, that you know, May, people don't travel in May, so we have started paying this increased fuel prices. And in terms of if you had to do your Porter's Five Forces, the power of customers in the bus market, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, they will switch from you to another operator for 5 rand, 10 rand difference.
Yeah.
So they decide what they want to pay.
Which is good as a consumer, but I like it.
But bad for APM.
Absolutely. But I mean, I think you'll be all right. Tumisang Khabusele, who's the chief executive at Africa People Mover, aspiring story of a guy who worked in the public sector and has gone private. And he told you his tale this evening. His name is Tumisang Khabusele.